This is Pure Decking, show number 331 for Thursday, January, what, 4th? 3rd. The hell is today? Today, 3rd. Thursday, January 3rd, you know, 1999. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and fighting in vain against the relentless passage of time. I'm Morps, and tonight I am drinking a basic lager that was given to me for a microbrewery for Christmas, and it's a basic lager. There's nothing really. It's called Grit, and it's from a microbrewery in Florida, and it's very basic. Yeah, my dad would like it. Anyways, we have Madman. What are you doing?
You want to plug the microbrew?
I would, except I don't remember the name.
Okay.
Crux, maybe? No, it's not Crux. Yeah, maybe it is Crux. I don't remember. Anyways.
If you want a mediocre lager, try Crux. It won't make you sick. It might make you buzzed. It won't make you throw up. We sort of endorse it, from what I'm gathering. Maybe.
It's drinkable.
If you want good booze, I do wholeheartedly say Bullet Bourbon is good booze.
Bullet Bourbon is good booze. I don't actually have any bourbon in the house at all right now, which is why I'm drinking beer.
That is what I am drinking.
Nice.
Then in a separate glass, just because it's still kind of Christmassy, I've got ginger ale. I don't know why I consider it a Christmas drink, but I do.
Well, you know, if it works for you. So... Anyways, first show of the year, we're back. I don't remember how long I said we'd be on hiatus for the holiday stuff.
You said at least through the first of the year.
Yeah.
So we are back as early as we could be.
Okay, well, that works. Of course, I don't actually remember, so you could have said we were coming back in February, and I'd be like, oh, damn, we're early, and I wouldn't have known any different. So it's like, fuck, I may have said that, I don't know. So... anyways, yeah, first show of the year, and news stories are awfully light. But that's okay. That happens this time of year. So, anyways, I guess we'll get into it. The article I ran across that I thought was kind of one of the more interesting things to talk about. Well, I guess, you know, before that, without going into insane detail, how's your holiday, Madman? How's your Christmas?
It's pretty good. I got to see a bunch of family members that I hadn't seen in a while. Got some gifts that were pretty cool. I've expanded my Pathfinder collection, so I have new source books that I'll probably never use.
Ooh. So
one of them was actually suggested that I get for the module that I was looking at, Ultimate Magic. So I think there's probably some loot items out of it that the module is going to reference.
Are you thinking about running a module?
I'm thinking about running a module. I'm going to finish reading the one I picked up and then grab Ultimate Occult because it's going to reference some stuff from that book. Figure out what mobs I need to roll up, but if you're interested in playing, roll up a level 6 something that would be in a city. So if you have the expanded races, so long as there's not a level modifier, so no royal drow, and that race would be in a city, so nothing that doesn't live in cities.
That is simply a challenge of creativity, sir.
Well, you'll need to have a very justifiable backstory on why your 3-inch tall fairy that lives in the deep wild is in the city.
captured by traders, obviously. But why am I playing a fairy?
The first thing that came into mind that doesn't live in cities. You can play something else. I mean, you play a Drider, but I'm going to have you killed.
just flat out, yeah, you're going to die.
you're not going to live. The guards are going to attack you.
Goblin Dread Necromancer lives in the sewers. There we go. Anyways.
Actually, the Pathfinder, I don't know if that's an auto dead or not. You might actually be able to walk through the front door.
Right up until they get to the smell. Anyways.
Forced bathing.
Just everybody does the bucket trick now on top of the doors just in case he walks through. That'd be kind of fun. So Ars Technica has a pretty interesting article. They posted this on the 1st. And so they've embellished it a bit, but anyway, so I'll just read it here. As the ball dropped over Times Square last night, all copyrighted works published in 1923 fell into the public domain with a few exceptions. Now everyone has the right to republish them or adapt them for use in new works. And it's the first time this has happened in 21 years. In 1998, works published in 1922 or earlier were in the public domain. But with 1923 works scheduled to expire at the beginning of 1999... but then Congress passed the Sonny Bono Copyright Term Extension Act. It added 20 years to the terms of older works, keeping 1923 works locked up until 2019. Many people, including the author, expected another fight over copyright extension in 2018, but it never happened. And I know we've talked about this. This may have been on IHN. I don't know that we ever talked about it on Decking. No, I think I may have mentioned it on Decking, like right in the middle of like the beginning, complaining that nothing had ended.
How long it takes for things to hit public domain.
Yeah, we have talked about that, but I don't know that we talked about the last time stuff entered. I may have mentioned the last time stuff entered the public domain, but it's actually starting to happen again.
That is crazy.
Yeah. 20 years.
I don't know if there are people that were alive in 1923 to claim copyright on this shit.
Well, they'd have to be centennial. Yeah, I mean, there could be. You know, what's the record somebody hit? 109, 110? I mean, if you're discounting the Bible.
Yeah. I mean,
it's close.
Yeah, this is corporations keeping things locked up for too long.
Oh, yeah. So Congress left the existing law in place, and so those 1923 copyrights expired on schedule this morning. And, of course, this was published on the 1st. And assuming Congress doesn't interfere, more works will fall into the public domain each January from now on. Next January, George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue will fall into the public domain. It'll also be followed by The Great Gatsby in 2021 and Ernest Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises in January of 2022. On January 1st of 2024, we'll see the expiration of the copyright for Steamboat Willie. So
that's Mickey Mouse.
That's the first version of Mickey Mouse. And with it, Disney's claim to the film's star Mickey Mouse. The copyrights to Superman, Batman, Disney's Snow White, and early Looney Tunes characters will all fall into the public domain between 2031 and 2035. The expiration of copyrights for characters like Mickey Mouse and Batman will raise tricky new legal questions. After 2024, Disney won't have copyright protection for Mickey's original incarnation, but Disney will still own the copyrights for later incarnations of the character and will also own Mickey-related trademarks. James Grimmelman, a copyright scholar at Cornell Law School, tells Ars that this is an uncharted area of law because licensing practices for modern characters are so much more intensive and so much more comprehensive now than in the 1920s and 30s. We never had mega characters in the same way prior to the 1920s, he said.
I want to call bullshit on Snow White. That's a Grimm's fairy tale.
Well, it's the Disney version of it. No, the Disney version of the character.
Yeah.
Like drawn in that fashion.
Okay.
Yeah. And I guess that assumes the Seven Dwarves as well, the way they drew them. So,
Oh god, the explosion of hentai is going to be astronomical.
Like those guys care about copyright law. Actually, isn't that already protected under parody?
I slightly hope not. I mean, it probably is, but that's not parody. That's what it is.
It's just what it is.
It is what it is, and it is not parody. Although, the whole Batman, or even Superman...
Well, it's the original version of the characters, though. You know, that's the Superman who couldn't fly and had that shitty-looking S on his chest, not the modern version.
I was just going with the new 52 reboots will still be under. So we'll, do they just go with every time DC revamps his storyline is a new copyright on it?
Yeah, this is the version of the Batman. This is a version of Batman who, you know, carried the gun that shot his parents and just murdered criminals. But
and the version of Superman that was fighting Model Ts.
Yes. But the article goes on talking about that too. So,
can you draw them in modern settings?
You know, as long as it's that version of the character, you could make that argument. So, Dennis Karjala? K-A-R-J-A-L-A. Karjala?
Yeah, you can try that. I'm just going to call him Dennis.
Okay. Was a law professor who helped lead the doomed resistance to the 1998 extension. He passed away in 2017, but when the author interviewed him in 2013, he told the author that it was basically the Gershwin Family Trust, children of Oscar Hammerstein, Disney, others of that ilk, who pushed for even longer copyright terms. Most copyrighted works became commercially worthless within a decade or two, but a small minority of famous works from the 1920s and 30s were still generating significant revenues in the 1990s. Retroactively extending copyright terms meant an enormous windfall for the companies and families that owned the copyrights. There was not a single argument that can actually stand up to any kind of reasonable analysis, Dennis said. But the public domain had few defenders. So even though the arguments for longer copyright terms weren't very strong, they won the day in Congress. Until recently, the author assumed the same interest groups would try to extend copyright terms again in 2018, but the political climate for copyright legislation has changed radically over the last 20 years. A year ago, Ars Technica broke the news that three of the nation's most powerful rights holder groups in the country, Motion Picture Association of America, Recording Industry Association of America, and the Authors Guild, were not even going to try to pass legislation extending copyrights. It's not something we are pursuing, an RIAA spokesperson told the author. The reason was simple. Grimmelman argues that they knew they weren't going to win. There is now a well-organized grassroots lobby against copyright expansion, Grimmelman tells Ars. There are large business interests now on the anti-expansion side, also a wide popular movement that they can tie into. The rise of the internet and its remix culture means that a lot of people now benefit from a growing public domain in ways that were not true in 1998. This includes big companies like Google, but also includes grassroots communities like Wikipedia editors and Reddit users. The emerging copyright reform coalition flexed its lobbying muscles in 2012 when it overwhelmingly defeated an internet filtering bill called the Stop Online Privacy Act. If the usual suspects had pushed for another copyright extension, they would have had a serious fight on their hands. Digital rights holders, online activists, and lobbyists from big technology companies would have swarmed Capitol Hill, making the case against copyright extension. Evidently, major rights holders don't have the stomach for another battle like that. It's also possible they could make another effort in the future, but such an effort would face long odds. Today's opponents of copyright extensions are vastly better organized and better funded than the ragtag band that tried to stop the 1998 extension. Well, not, yeah, because basically Disney was just pumping money into Washington to get it, you know, to get it extended every time. And since the mouse doesn't come up until 2024, they've got a few years to wait for a more favorable government because Trump's going to tell them to eat a dick if they try. He's going to be like, I really don't care. Unless they offer to pay for the wall, then he'd probably give them whatever they want. But.
All he wants is $5 billion. The mouse has that lying around.
Disney would be like, okay, here you go. Can we put Disney characters on the wall? Sure.
Yes.
Okay.
Both sides of it. We're cool with that.
Yeah. Sadly, I could see the Disney execs doing that. A company like Disney enjoys several layers of legal protection for a major character like Mickey Mouse. It owns the copyright to the original character. It also owns the copyright to subsequent versions of the character, which tend to be better known to modern audiences. It also owns trademark rights. The copyright for the original version of Mickey Mouse is scheduled to expire on January 1st, 2024, but other rights associated with Mickey Mouse will remain in place for longer. Suppose, for example, that you wanted to create a new Mickey Mouse toy without authorization from Disney. You'll be free to do that in 2024, but only if your mouse looks like and they have a picture of the original Steamboat Willie Mickey Mouse. And he does look a little bit different. You know, his eyes don't have pupils. They're just black dots. He's not wearing white gloves, and he's in black and white. They may actually make the argument that if you're going to make Mickey Mouse based off the Steamboat Willie, it has to be black and white. Yeah, and modern Mickey is still protected. Most obvious example is the white gloves. He didn't wear them in Steamboat Willie, but if you wanted to sell Mickey Mouse toy with white gloves, you'd probably need to wait until 2025 when the copyright for the first Mickey shot with white gloves, the Opry House, is scheduled to expire. The early Mickey Mouse cartoons were black and white, so if you want to make a Mickey Mouse toy with modern colors, you'd have to carefully research when those colors first appeared. Later changes to Mickey's appearance have been more subtle, and they may still be legally significant. I would expect Disney to be very careful to document similarities between the toys and any element of Mickey still under copyright, Gilman told Ars. It would be very easy to slip into more iconic Mickey toys without realizing it. So they're saying as you're designing it, you might forget that you have to stick to that original version and slip in something modern just by accident, you know?
When it comes to whether or not it can be in color, we're thinking motion pictures, but at that time, Mickey Mouse was also a comic strip, and some of those got color printings.
Hmm. You'd have to check the published date of those comics.
That's going to go with public domain.
Yep. Let's see, this is a line that third parties are already walking for the Sherlock Holmes series, which was published between 1887 and 1927. Most of the books are in public domain, but the last two volumes are still under copyright. A few years ago, the estate of Arthur Conan Doyle tried to stop publication of a book based on Sherlock Holmes' character, so somebody tried to write a new Sherlock Holmes book, arguing it was public domain now. But they tried to stop it, arguing that the full complexity of the Holmes character wasn't revealed until the later series. The Seventh Circuit Court Appeals Court rejected this argument, finding that the people were free to create new Sherlock Holmes books as long as they didn't use elements of the Holmes canon that were introduced in the books that were still under copyright. Is this why we started seeing a whole bunch of Sherlock Holmes movies and TV shows a couple of years ago? They all like started coming out at the same time. The Cumberbatch one did, and then they had that weird TV show where the guy from Hackers was playing Sherlock and doing a bad fake British accent, and then there was the movie where Iron Man played him, like all at the same time.
I actually thought that was a pretty good Sherlock Holmes, but yeah, that's why they were all coming out.
Actually, there's a thought. So Iron Man played him, and Cumberbatch played him, so Doctor Strange both played him. And then they were bickering with each other in the last Avengers movie. That's just strange. Now that I think about it. Doesn't matter. Just kind of stupid. Anyways. The same legal issues that will arise when other iconic characters, Batman, Superman, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Winnie the Pooh, and so forth, fall into public domain over the next 20 years. In a few years, it will be legal to create a new creative work based on these characters, and possibly even sell toys and other merchandise without authorization from the copyright holders. But the original rights holders will be looming over their shoulders. Anyone will be able to make a new Batman cartoon after 2035, but they'll have to be careful to only use elements from Batman's original incarnation. Storylines, characters, and other elements that were released in later years will still be under copyright, so people have to wait for those later editions of the series to explore before those elements will be free for anyone to use. So you'll get Batman, but you probably won't get the Joker for... because he didn't... Joker wasn't a character in the Batman comics for a couple of years until after this comic started up, if I remember right. Because in the early comics, he was just, you know, he had all these one-off goofy villains because he was killing them left and right.
We can have Professor Pig, but you cannot have the Joker.
So, let's see, the rest of the article. Disney holds both copyright and trademark protection for the Mickey Mouse character. Copyright protection expires, but trademark doesn't. So even after all the significant Mickey Mouse copyrights have expired, Disney could potentially use trademark law as a weapon against unauthorized Mickey Mouse products. Grimmelman calls this a messy area for IP law. The big question for trademark law is whether consumers are confused about the origin of a product. In this case, whether they believe a product is an official Disney merchandise. That might be easier case for Disney to win if someone used Mickey's image to market an unrelated product like toothpaste. But a company selling a Mickey Mouse toy or a new movie featuring Mickey Mouse would likely be on firmer legal ground, he argues. He points to a 2003 case where a company called Dastar republished portions of a television documentary based on a Dwight Eisenhower book. The copyright for the documentary had not been renewed, putting it into the public domain. Dastar edited it to strip out original credits and presented it as their own production. That's kind of shitty. I mean, you can do it when it's public domain, but that's kind of shitty. They just shot new credit scenes and put them on the... 20th Century Fox, which had owned the television rights before they expired, sued Dastar, arguing that they had violated trademark law by passing all Fox's work as its own, but the Supreme Court rejected the argument, noting that allowing the use of trademark law to restrict the republication of creative works creates a species of mutant copyright law that limits copying of public domain works. We have been careful to caution against misuse or overextension of trademark and related protections in areas traditionally occupied by patent or copyright, the High Court wrote. Grimlin argues that a similar reasoning would preclude Disney from using its trademarks to restrict creative reuse of Mickey Mouse. The broader principle for the decision stands... The broader principle the decision stands for is you can't use trademark law to control distribution of a copyrighted work, he tells Ars. Still, some amount of litigation is inevitable. Well, no shit. Disney would
1940 is when Joker was introduced.
Yeah, so a little bit. Disney could be quite vigilant about watching out for cartoons that give the impression they're affiliated with Disney, he says. So, so there's still some stuff. So they've got a change at the bottom I didn't see earlier when I found the article. He originally said all 1923 are now in public domain, but there are a few exceptions. The Music Modernization Act passed earlier this year gave a few years of added protection to early sound recordings and works whose pre-1924 publication was not authorized by the author might still be under copyright if the first authorized publication occurred in 1924 or later. He also removed an inaccurate paragraph about term extensions in the 1976 Copyright Act, so he just struck that whole thing out. But, it's going to be interesting, because that's the thing, that right, is even though all legal precedent is that you can't use trademark, who wants to be the first company that Disney sues the socks off of and then just tries to do attrition through the courts, even though the law's not on their side, to, prevent people from doing Mickey Mouse?
Like, I think the Electronic Freedom Foundation will step in on that case.
Possibly, but it's just Disney, right? So even if, they could just bury you in bullshit lawsuits just for trying. Even though they would be technically expired, they would be practically still around just from, them going nuts on it.
Well, that's why I'm hoping they would step in, because if they stepped in, it doesn't matter what all Disney buries you in. You're not paying legal fees. Ah. The lawyers volunteer. We now both have infinite money. Let's play this.
So... I don't know. This is cool. As Iron Angel says in the chat room, it's about fucking time that stuff started falling into public domain again. And in fact, I imagine today, if you got a movement together trying to, shorten copyright terms, like knock it back to 50 years or whatever it is, life of the author plus 50, is that what it is? Or plus, it's life of the author plus like 90 years today or some bullshit. But if you tried to get grassroots, get a big group together arguing to shorten copyright extensions, I think you'd have a shot at it.
Now that's something I would like to see, because the mouse is going to fight that.
Oh yeah, they're going to be like the hell you are. But I think that I'd like to see it. I think it's possible. I think you would get some serious support. And you're right. There'd be a lot of companies coming up saying, you're going to do what? So.
Like, we won't push to extend it, but we're going to give up what we've already got.
Yeah.
So, speaking of 2019 and stuff that we don't have, Where's the fuck is my flying car?
Yeah, Blade Runner.
Blade Runner was set in 2019. I want my flying car, my fuckable robot.
Didn't we already make this joke with Back to the Future?
Yes.
Just making sure.
Except for the robot part. That was just a flying car and flying skateboard.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm sure you can go on certain websites. They sell fuckable robots. I'm pretty sure they're from Japan.
Yeah, but they're not Blade Runner quality.
No. If anything, they're like creepy Barbie doll blown up to giant size quality.
Yeah, that's not worth spending money on.
Although that video Big sent me a couple of years ago was hilarious just because of the noise the thing made. You know, hearing all the motors going nuts in there all the time.
Oh, wait a minute. Having that shipped to somebody's parents' house might be worth money.
Wow. Expensive. You know, lottery winner, April Fool's pranks. Right there.
Yep.
What are you doing? I'm shipping a real doll to somebody's parents. From them.
Or to them. Either way, it's good.
Oh, my God. Anyways, next article up is actually from bestvpn.com, which I'm pretty sure is a shill site, but this article is in a few different places. So, Hollywood takes Popcorn Time developer to court. Stanislav Alkemnik. I need to learn Klingon so I can say some of these damn names. A Ukrainian national, believed to be the mastermind behind the popular Popcorn Time replica, popcorntime.to, is being sued by a group of Hollywood studios. The film studios in question, Venice PI, Millennium Funding, and Bodyguard Productions, allege that Alkemnik has purposely aided... I have no idea how to say that name, so we're just calling him Alkemnik from now on. Had purposely aided and abetted millions of online pirates to illegally watch titles, including The Hitman's Bodyguard, London Has Fallen, and Once Upon a Time in Venice. Popcorn Time is a popular online BitTorrent service that provides peer-to-peer access to various film titles. The service rose to notoriety 5 years ago and has since been downloaded millions of times. Since the platform was first developed, various Popcorn Time forks, replica sites, have emerged, but none has been as successful as PopcornTime.to. The fork in question has been up and running since 2014 and is available for pirating movies now. Since it's by now, since its inception, developers have actively improved the service, and it even launched its own torrent tracker. Now, an attorney with a history of taking on piracy cases is working on behalf of Hollywood to prevent the site from being used to download films. If successful, they hope to shut down the site through federal courts in Hawaii. Ukrainian guy being taken to court in Hawaii. Legal shit is weird. The original case was filed over a year ago, but an amendment filed the last few days by the movie studio's attorney, it would appear that the alleged mastermind behind Popcorn.Time.to has been uncovered. The documents state that they managed to track down Stanislav Alkemnik, the Ukrainian defendant, via the hosting provider Blackhost. Blackhost has been providing web hosting services to the defendant last year. According to the new complaint, a third-party website controlled by Alkemnik, UpToDown.com, was responsible for disseminating the Popcorn Time software to 4 million Windows users and 12 million Android users. Kind of interesting there about the numbers that Android was... You know, three times as popular as Windows there.
Tablets and smartphones.
Yeah, and those TV boxes. The case is also focused on alleged Hawaiian Popcorn Time user called Clinton Bovey. According to the complaint, Bovey used PopcornTime.to to download various movies in breach of copyright. If found guilty, Bovey could face fines of up to $150,000 per pirated film.
That is retarded. See, at that point, I'm going to argue that I wasn't pirating. I didn't sell this shit. That's what that fine was for. It's for Bob making a million copies of this film, selling it for $1.75 when it's in retail for $9.
Yeah, I would think the most you could get out of somebody who downloaded the movies is the retail cost of the film at release, right?
Yeah. That $100,000 a pop is retarded.
Yeah. Kind of makes you want to make a really bad movie and then see if you can get it up on pirate sites just so you can, you know, sue and hope for a payday. Oh, wait.
This is the film. We're calling it My Movie Cabinet.
I'm pretty sure that's
my
like
movie
the,
cabinet.
I'm pretty sure that's the business strategy of like half of those weird ass Bollywood films. So
It is the business strategy of that company that does like Snakes on a Train.
And some of those other really bad like C-list movies.
They're coming out, and the title's just similar enough to the blockbuster that's coming out that year.
The best one is The Incredible Bulk. Have you seen that one?
No.
Oh, Mad Men. Go on YouTube and just watch some clips of it. This thing is fucking hilarious. It's a really bad movie. Like, I feel sorry for the actors in it, because they gave them like really ridiculous bad lines and just green screened the hell out of it, right? But the green screen and the CGI of the monster were like done in MS Paint. It's really bad.
Wonderful.
Like, I'm not kidding. It looks like fucking MS Paint. In the meantime, filmmakers have requested an injunction to shut down popcorntime.to. They also want the court to transfer the domain to an account under their control. If successful, this could spell the end of one of the most popular popcorn time forks ever. More worryingly for users, it could also allow firms to access the service in order to uncover more IP addresses belonging to pirates. As is always the case when pirating movies are a bit torn, Popcorn Time users are warned they do so at their own risk, and it is recommended they always protect their privacy with a VPN. Hence why it's on bestvpn.com.
He's Ukrainian. I know the internet is causing some jurisdictional issues. And I can actually see Hollywood's argument of the infringers are in the U.S., thus we have claims. That might be claims against the people infringing. I don't know if that should be claims against copy... against Popcorn Time.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think Bob What's-His-Nuts in Arkansas downloading something off of Popcorn Time, they have the clear right to go after him. But Mr. Alchemist, Full Metal, being in Ukraine, no, I don't see where they can go after him there.
Well, I mean, you pull up that article and try to say that name.
I pulled it up and looking at it. Yeah. I was going to go with Stan, but Alchemist is better.
So, no, I agree. I don't know how you go after this guy when he's in the wrong jurisdiction. But they don't want to say that you can't go after people outside of their jurisdiction because, well, then everybody's just going to host everything out of, you know, random part of Africa, right? So
that is going to come up with the jurisdictional issues with the internet, though.
That's true.
Is it the country it's being hosted in or the country the offender's in, or do they honestly both have jurisdiction? I could see joint jurisdiction as a possibility.
I could too, because at that point, it's... So... Anyways, next article is from McClashyDC.com.
Oh, before we go to that, think of how scary joint jurisdiction can be. I'm not going to try to press prosecution in the U.S. All they're going to do is fine you. I'm going to press prosecution in North Korea... Because I can bribe somebody to let me chop off your feet.
We'll feed you to the dogs. Yeah. It's like, what are you doing? It's called making an example.
Yeah, now we can move on. I just want to make that comment.
Okay. Next article is from McClashyDC.com. And a Russian-funded English language website aimed at sowing divisions among Americans. Where's my button? Has had a vital... Huh?
At this point, they're wasting their money.
Well, true. Has had a vital internet security certificate yanked, meaning U.S. internet users will have difficulty accessing the site because you can't get another SSL cert. God, no. The executive director of a California-based nonprofit group that issues security certificates told McClatchy Wednesday that the group had revoked certificates for USAReally.com, a website that was set up by a close associate of Russian President Vladimir Putin. That joke's going to get old really quick. The action means that users can no longer visit the site while employing Mozilla Firefox's browser, and will soon get warnings that the site is insecure on browsers such as Apple-developed Safari and Google's Chrome. We have revoked all outstanding certificates for that site and banned it from getting certificates from us in the future, the executive director for the Internet Security Research Group, Josh Az, said in an email. The revocation came 2 weeks after the Treasury Department slapped sanctions on the founder and the editor of USA Really, Alexander Malkovich, making it a crime to conduct financial transactions with him. So I don't think that this was, I don't think that this was any great, you know, SSL certificate company deciding they're going to be censors of the internet. I think this was, there was an actual sanction slapped on the guy. So it's like, well, we can't really do business with him. So, but the revocation, okay, I already read that. Treasury describes USA Really as part of a broad Russian campaign to interfere in political and electoral systems worldwide, adding that some of the actions were under the direction of, oh God, Yegnevy Prizgoyan, a friend of Putin who was one of the sponsors of a Russian troll factory accused of meddling in the 2016 elections. USA Really engaged in efforts to post content focused on diverse are divisive political issues, but it's generally ridden with inaccuracies, Treasury said. Malkovich visited the United States multiple times in 2018, attempting to organize a rally to support President Donald Trump in front of the White House in June. Days after that attempt fizzled, Malkovich spoke with McClatchy. He was briefly detained at Washington's Duties Airport after the November 6th midterm elections. Malkovich was searched and illegally interrogated as an international criminal, and all of his electronic devices were scanned. USA Really told story said on December 20th. It noted that the Russian was told he must register in the United States as a foreign agent. If he's operating as an agent of Vladimir Putin, shouldn't he register as a foreign agent? I mean, am I missing something there? the website said that the actions against USA Really and Malkovich comprised reckless, unsubstantiated accusations against an independent, unbiased news agency. Reached for comment, Malkovich said he was on vacation and would need time to formulate a response. Facebook and Twitter both shut down accounts by USA Really in mid-2018. Security certificates were developed to enhance trust between blah, 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 issued by... let's see. We all know what those are. There are several levels of security encryption. Most display a padlock. Security issues certificates issued by the California Public Benefit Nonprofit expire after 90 days. So within 90 days, all browsers will show an error if USA Really continues to use a certificate from us. Oh, fuck. They were using Let's Encrypt. I didn't realize that reading the article. They were using Let's Encrypt. Let's Encrypt is free. if USA Really stops using the certificates we provided them, users will not see certificate errors anymore, but the site will not be using secure HTTPS, and browsers may display other warnings about that. Chrome, for example, will mark the site as not secure in the URL bar. But you can get certificates from lots of other places than Let's Encrypt. Many websites sell them. Get them from GoDaddy. They're like, I don't know, $50 for a couple of years, something like that. I mean, they're not expensive. So... but if he's got injunctions against him, then he probably couldn't do it himself. But there are foreign providers of SSL certs. So this is like, on one hand, it's kind of funny and kind of dumb. On the other hand, you're inconveniencing him and going to make him have to pay $100 a year or so to get an SSL cert from somewhere else in the world. So.
Look around for another free one.
Well, there used to be several. Let's Encrypt is the most well-known one. But I didn't realize they were using Let's Encrypt from reading the article because they never actually said where he got it from. But that's the thing, though. Let's Encrypt is politically active. So if you're running a website that they think is fake news, Let's Encrypt will revoke your certs. Now, with this one, it seems kind of, you know, the person running it, you know, being good friend of Putin might kind of set the bar a little high. But, you know, if Alex Jones was using Let's Encrypt, do you think they'd pull his certs too?
Yes.
That's the thing. So, again, this comes back to you're not paying. You know, I had problems with Let's Encrypt, you know, back when they first announced, because it's like, well, you're not paying for the certs. There's no actual relationship there. How does that work? And now we're going to start, and now we're starting to see where they could abuse that. Now, it sounds to me like that website's also kind of full of crap, but, you know, it's kind of like back when they clicked the storm fags off the internet. It's like, you know, those guys are really egregious and kind of easy to target, but that opens the door. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Free speech is to protect the speech you don't like. If I liked it, no one would be after it. So, I guess the phrase would be, if everyone liked it, no one would be after it.
Yeah. And following in that trend, this article is from Torrent Freak. Domain registrars can be held liable for a pirate site, court rules. So again, this is the courts telling these internet companies that you know, you can be held liable for what your customers do. So they're kind of trying to force the issue to make the internet service providing companies politically active, maybe not politically in this case, but active in, you know, controlling what's on their services, which has never been the way to do it before. It's always been kind of just hands off. If, you know, if you had a problem, I don't like this, because this is along the lines of holding an apartment complex responsible because somebody got shot in an apartment, you know? But
ooh, they're going to start actually looking at what everyone does really closely if they can be sued.
The Higher Regional Court of Saarbrücken has confirmed that domain registrars can be held liable for the infringement of pirate sites. Even a single link can require a registrar to take a domain offline. The case in question was filed by Universal Music over Robin Thicke's album Blurred Lines. It relates to a defunct torrent site, but a similar order has hit the Pirate Bay as well. In September of 2013, h33t.com, one of the internet's most visited torrent sites and at the time, disappeared from the web. Although the downtime was initially shrouded in mystery, it later became clear that the site had been targeted in a copyright infringement action. In order to stop the distribution of a copy of Robin Thicke's album Blurred Lines, Universal Music had obtained an injunction against Key Systems, a German-based registrar where the h33t.com domain was registered. Key Systems wasn't happy with the ruling and the precedent it set, but had no other option than to comply. However, the company informed us at the time that it would appeal the verdict, hoping to have it lifted. This was the start of a drawn-out legal battle from which the latest ruling was just released. The Higher Regional Court of Saarbrücken concluded Key Systems can be held liable, secondarily liable for the infringing actions of a customer if it fails to take action if rights holders point out obvious copyright infringing online activity. This could mean that if a site owner is unresponsive to takedown requests, Key Systems and other registrars can be required to take a domain name offline, even when the infringement activity is limited to a single page. The local music group BVMI is happy with the outcome of the case. They believe it will help copyright holders take action against infringing activity. This is a further important clarification in the legal space of the internet, helping it to become clearer and fairer for creatives and their partners, says Rene Horatu, BVMI's Managing Director of Legal and Political Affairs. The court affirms, with clearly outlined criteria, the responsibility of so-called registrars. Why is the word so-called in there? That's just so-called registrars, and thus gives effective rights holders an important legal tool to defend themselves against unlawful use of their content on the internet. For Heat, the case is no longer relevant. The site did make a comeback after the initial problems, at first at heat.eu and later at heat.to. However, 2 years later, it disappeared for good. So they never survived getting their domain shut off. That said, the German ruling can affect other sites and registrars as well. In fact, a similar legal battle, Domain Registrar's OneAPI lost a case earlier this year, which required it to disconnect several Pirate Bay-related domains. The domains in question include the piratebay.gd, the piratebay.la, the piratebay.mn, and the piratebay.vg. These were already disabled years ago and are no longer in use, but it confirms that registrars can be required to take action against pirate sites. Lawyer Mirko... Oh, God. That's even got foreign characters in it. Mirko Brube notes that in this case, the court clarified that registrars not only have to take domain offline, but they should prevent it from being transferred to another company. Pirate Bay's former registrar, OneAPI, was not allowed to appeal the case any further, but Key Systems still has the option to take the case to German federal court. This means that the H33T case may not be over. Torn Freak reached out to Key Systems for comment and asked if it had plans to fight the issue at the highest courts, but had yet to hear back. So, yeah, they're going to start holding hosting companies responsible if they can't get what they don't like taken offline. I mean, it's part of a wider trend, right? If you know, either they're going to censor, or they're going, you know, either the company service, you know, service social media platform is going to censor, or they'll sue it or attack their payment processing. See, you know, Patreon and what's the other one everybody was going to? Shit.
Said with Patreon, it wasn't a government order that was causing the last shit.
No, it was credit cards and PayPal processors because they were getting complaints.
Yeah, MasterCard is the one that cracked down the last volley.
But there was another one they went after. It was a clone of Patreon, but it was mostly cam girls used it. I'm trying to remember what it was called. Damn it. I know where I saw it talked about. It was... I can't remember the name. Let's see, I remember where I saw it. Let's see. Oh, don't play that. Don't play that. I was trying to play things. Subscribestar. That was the other one. Like, Subscribestar, like, literally had all their payment processors turned off because some of the political types moved on to it. So, yeah, I think the trend is going to be that you're going to see more and more of these big internet service providers just being forced to, you know, whether it's piracy or, you know, political content, they're just going to be forced to take it offline. And this is where you're going to see things like Tor starting to get a lot more mainstream use because the mainstream internet will all be corporate-friendly censored shit. Kind of defeats the fun of it, doesn't it?
It somewhat defeats the fun of it, but I'm wondering if there's going to be a step in, not just for cryptocurrencies, but once a corporation gets large enough that it dictates policy, do you think there could be an antitrust action taken against them?
Well, they've already been several people looking at antitrust against Google.
So I'm not just going with Google. I mean, I think they're the ones you could target. But with MasterCard dictating, we won't let you process payments if you do something we don't like, if they have enough clout to shut something down, is it time for them to be broken up? Well, or should we even allow a private bank to process transactions like that?
I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer on that one because, you know, if you try to say MasterCard is large enough that they constitute antitrust, they're going to point to Visa and they're going to point to other, you know, payment processors saying, no, we're not. But they're large enough to effectively be, and most of the other card payment processors are going to have similar policies. So I don't know. I don't know how that plays out.
And should, in this case, since they are effectively channeling money, I mean, we don't, it's not really money, but we use it as money. So could, I don't know, the Treasury step in and just be like, we're going to start processing all transactions, and would that be a better route?
Oh God, I don't like the idea of the government doing that, because we've seen the government get abused for political purposes in all kinds of places. See the IRS under Obama. That's the first example that comes to my mind. I'm sure there's others.
Well, that's the most recent.
I'm trying to think. I'm sure other parts of the government get politicized all the time. I know the EPA kind of gets beat up back and forth over that too. So I don't know. I don't know that I would want the government doing that. What about the Fed? They're technically independent.
They're technically MasterCard.
Yeah.
Actually, no. MasterCard is actually one of the banks in the Fed. I think it was MasterCard.
Oh, well, never mind.
But shouldn't, well, even if you don't like the government involved in it, I would argue that falls under the powers of a sovereign government is controlling its currency. And right now we are letting MasterCard and Visa control currency.
That's true. Although technically you're right. It's not currency. It's just information. The only thing the government really has the right to say is currency is the money it prints, you know, with the note on it saying this is legal tender for all debts. So, I don't know. Although you have so many people who say, oh, no, we don't take cash. We only do credit. Just, you know, for processing and ease. I don't know where that falls out. That's a completely different. I don't know where I was taking it, but that is such a different take on it. I don't know. I'm also surprised to hear you advocate for government doing anything, but.
Well, I like the idea of anarchy, but the idea of anarchy is kind of like the whole idea of communism. They both work on paper. A shit ton of people are going to die, and no one's going to be happy with either situation. So I do see government as having a few roles. And unless we're going to have a hard currency such as gold, and you can only pay for things in gold, we're going to need to have the government step in on a bit just to regulate our money.
It's an interesting concept. I mean, you immediately bankrupt, you know, credit card companies, PayPal. Well, not credit card companies. You bankrupt the payment processing arms of those companies. So then
they cease to exist.
Yeah.
Now, Visa, MasterCard, they can still exist as credit companies, but they're no longer going to have that. They're no longer going to be on the logos on your debit cards.
Yeah, that would basically be the end of them as they exist today. So if nothing else, they're going to fight that just to save their business model, sort of like all the, all the tax processing firms that lobby the government to keep taxes complex as hell every year. So, anyways, speaking of uprisings, let's go on to the next one. This one's from the New York Times. Wielding knives and rocks, Arizonans are attacking self-driving cars.
Fucking yes. The Luddites have risen again. The Luddites have risen again.
Chandler, Arizona. The assailant slipped out of a park around noon one day in October, zeroing in on his target, which was idling in a nearby intersection, a self-driving van operated by Waymo, the driverless car company spun out by Google. He carried out his attack with an unidentified sharp object, swiftly slashing one of the tires. The suspect, identified as a white man in his 20s, then melted into the neighborhood on foot. He's a superhero. He can melt.
Pocket knife. The object is a fucking pocket knife. You're trying to make this more mysterious than it needs to be. They're common. I have 30 of them.
You got more than I do. Although I've got one that makes a really satisfying clicking noise when you open it up because it's almost a switchblade. So, anyways, the slashing was one of nearly two dozen attacks on driverless vehicles over the past 2 years in Chandler, a city near Phoenix where Waymo started testing its vans in 2017. In ways large and small, the city has has had an early look at public misgivings over the rise of artificial intelligence and the city officials hearing complaints about everything from safety to possible job losses. Some people have pelted Waymo vans with rocks, according to police reports. Others have reportedly tried to run the vehicles off the road. One woman screamed at the vans, telling it to get out of her suburban neighborhood. A man pulled alongside a Waymo van vehicle and threatened the employee riding inside with a piece of PVC pipe. Shit's getting militant. In one more harrowing episode, well, it's the New York Times, so they would think this is harrowing. A man waved a .22 caliber revolver at a Waymo vehicle and the emergency backup driver. I love this article for the phrase "emergency backup driver" at the wheel.
It's because of back when cruise control was invented, idiots thought it was a self-driving car. So a lot of states have it on the books. You have to have a human behind the wheel, even if all they're doing is breathing.
Oh, I know. But I'm just, I love the phrase, the phraseology of emergency backup driver. One of the more harrowing episodes, a man waved a .22 caliber revolver at the Waymo vehicle and the emergency backup driver at the wheel. He told the police that he despises driverless cars, referring to the killing of a female pedestrian in March in nearby Tempe by a self-driving Uber car. There are other places they can test, said Eric Opalka, 37, who was issued a warning by the police in November after multiple reports that his Jeep Wrangler had tried to run Waymo vans off the road. So he didn't try to run him off the road. His Jeep Wrangler did it. So is his Jeep Wrangler also a self-driving car? Come on, guys. English. In one case, driving head-on towards one of the self-driving vehicles until it was forced to come to a abrupt stop. His wife, Elizabeth, 35, admitted in an interview that her husband finds it entertaining to brake hard in front of self-driving. Brake check! In front of the self-driving vans, and that she herself may have forced them to pull over so she could yell at them to get out of their neighborhood. The trouble started, the couple said, when their 10-year-old son was nearly hit by one of the vehicles when he was playing in a nearby cul-de-sac. They said they need real-world examples, but I don't want to be their real-world mistake, said Mr. Opalka, who runs his own company providing information technology to small businesses. They didn't ask us if we wanted to be part of their beta test, he added to his wife, or added his wife, who helps run the business. At least 21 such attacks have been leveled at Waymo vans in Chandler, as first reported by the Arizona Republic. Some analysts say they expect more such behavior in the as the nation moves into a broader discussion about the potential for driverless cars to unleash colossal changes in American society. The debate touches on fears ranging from eliminating jobs to drivers to ceding control over mobility to autonomous vehicles. People are lashing out justifiably, said Douglas Ruskoff, a media theorist at City University of New York and the author of the book Throwing Rocks at the Google Bus. He likened driverless cars to robotic incarnations of scabs, workers who refuse to join strikes or take part or take the place of those on strike. There's a growing sense that the giant corporations honing driverless technologies do not have our best interests at heart, Mr. Ruskoff said. Just think about the humans inside these vehicles who are essentially training the artificial intelligence that will replace them. God. The emergency drivers in the Waymo vans that were attacked in various cases told the Chandler police that the company preferred not to pursue prosecution of the assailants. The article goes on a little bit more, and it's mostly just kind of BS. But anyways, I mean, yeah, these things are pissing people off. And although I'm kind of wondering when you start seeing semi trucks, long haul shipping being drawn by driverless cars, and they just finally decide to just not put drivers in them so they don't have to pay somebody to sit in the car. You start seeing road pilots of people either hacking the cars by fucking with the GPS or just, pulling a full on Fast and the Furious and pulling up beside them because there's no human in the car to retaliate for them trying to steal whatever's in the van or the truck.
I think they'd have the same issue they have now with trying to steal stuff from a truck.
True.
Called the Highway Patrol.
Fair point. But I don't know. I mean, it is kind of getting to a point where you're going to see people back, you know, lashing back against technology, especially as automation becomes more and more prominent. And I mean, hell, you go to any store, it's all self-checkout anymore with only like one or two regular lanes open. You know, McDonald's is already doing that as well to try to reduce how many employees they need to have. I think you're going to see more of this kind of backlash.
Oh, especially with the gyroless, if it ever goes commercial. That's the largest one of the, it's definitely the largest well-paid non-high school education job you can get. But it's one of the best as far as cash and benefits.
Oh, sure. So, yeah, I mean, think how many people would, I mean, within a very short time span, be out of work and unemployable. I mean, that right alone, you'll have the riots from, I think it was Appleseed, where you had actually had people rioting against the robots. I don't remember.
Possibly it's been a while since I watched Appleseed.
I'm not one of the newer versions of it, like one of the old versions of it. I think I remember watching it on the Sci-Fi Channel where they were protesting all the robots. I think that was Appleseed.
That was Appleseed set on Mars?
No. I don't believe so. Was it something different then?
Yeah, it was not just robots, but they were robots that could have kids. Women were protesting that dudes were pretty much buying robo hookers and sending the checks.
Oh, fuck. I remember that now. You're right.
What the Armitage hell was that? The third.
Armitage. Yep. Anybody wants to scream nerd at the people doing internet radio, go right ahead. next article. It's from The Wrap.
Oh, and going with the nerd. Anyone that's looking up Armitage the Third, it was a decent movie. Don't bother looking up the first and the second. They don't exist. I looked for those too. Armitage the Third is referring to the third series in the robot line. Third movie in the series.
So, next article is from The Wrap. Scarlett Johansson, fight against deepfake porn is a lost cause.
Someone learned.
Scarlett Johansson said that fighting against deepfake porn videos in which someone's face is superimposed on top of a clip in which they didn't actually appear has become a lost cause. The Avengers star commented in a Sunday Washington Post story about how artificial intelligence software is being used to create increasingly realistic-looking fake porn videos and how women are inordinately targeted.
Dudes are inordinately the ones fapping off to them.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Madman. One bogus video, which is falsely described as leaked footage of Johansson, has been viewed more than 1.5 million times on a popular porn site. Well, I mean, which one?
Pornhub.
If
it didn't originate there, it's there now.
Nothing can stop someone from cutting and pasting my image or anyone else's onto a different body and making it look eerily realistic as desired, Johansson told the Post. The fact is that trying to protect yourself from the internet and its depravity is basically a lost cause. Depravity. Trying to protect yourself from the internet and its depravity is a lost cause. That right there. Oh, man. I wonder if that's on camera, because that would be a great audio clip just to have. You know, her saying that.
That would be amazing. And just for that, Scarlett, I will not fap to any deepfake of you out of respect.
I hit two buttons at once.
Both of them are accurate. It works.
Compounding matters. The video exists in a gray area where there is actually little legal recourse in the United States, as Wired pointed out earlier this year. Wired explained that the videos are safeguarded by their own phoniness. You can sue someone if they grab a nude photo of you from the cloud and share it without your consent. But deep fake videos aren't violating privacy laws because they're not exposing a real likeness. Not all targets of deepfakes are celebrities. The Post led its story with a 40-something woman who felt violated after her face was used in a deepfake video. She said she was terrified it would ruin her marriage or career. A few major tech platforms in the last year have taken steps to combat deepfakes. Earlier this year, Reddit banned its deepfake subreddit, which had more than 15,000 followers, for violating its policy against involuntary pornography. There's another one of those just winning phrases. You know, it's up there with emergency backup driver. Involuntary pornography.
Is that when you were pissing in the woods and a trail cam catches you?
That, or, you know, the Boy Scout troop happens to walk by at the time?
Well, no, that's involuntary sexual offender.
Oh, okay.
And your name's on the list at that point. Good luck finding housing in Florida.
In September, Google banned involuntary synthetic pornographic imagery and allowed people to request that Google block any deepfake porn videos of themselves. So, yeah, sorry, this video, it's just a bit of fun, you know, I mean, it's just like, yeah, you can't really do anything about it. That's correct. So, anyways, the last, it's not really a news article, but it's relevant for us. It's a forum post on the old Rant Radio forums. I believe it was also posted in the Rant Radio or Rant Media subreddit. At midnight tonight, Sumerian is shutting down the original Rant Radio Shoutcast server. So his post goes on detailing the history of the radio station, how long they've been running, which is about 20 years, and, you know, how much fun they've had and how basically internet radio is dead because of YouTube and, you know, live streaming and all this, all the other things out there that have basically replaced things like that, that it's, you know, media on demand has basically won. So they're basically announcing that it's time to shut down. So, but, so, you know, I mean, we've had back and forth with Rant Radio. Our group started out of a group of people that met up because of Rant. And, you know, several of us tried to help Rant run their stuff, and that kind of had mixed results. And, you know, there were some hard feelings at times, but, you know, we wish them well nowadays. So, and yeah, they're shutting down their audio streams. Although I don't know that they've been making new shows for a while. I know the original guys aren't. They haven't been making new shows on there for a long time. I don't know about, I know they recruited some other people at some point, but, yeah. So, you know, wish them well, best of luck.
I wonder if they just moved over to YouTube. Tales from the After Now on YouTube.
Well, I looked through their forum. They did post a lot of their old shows onto YouTube. So, yeah, I think they're doing that with a lot of their old stuff. They're just not, I don't think they've made anything new in a long time, though. So,
I think they had internal creative differences, and that's what killed it. They've just kept the site up because no one knew what to do with it.
Well, you can make that argument about G15. We're just doing this as a zombie habit at this point. But, I mean, my God, when do we start? The first Pure Decking was posted in March of 2011.
And then there was two shows before that that went on for a bit before you decided to think of Pure Decking.
Yeah, so I probably started, I think I started G15... I want to say late 2010, like, no, maybe it was like October in 2010 that we actually started this mess.
I don't know. We were drinking at the time.
Yeah, that's true. So it's been up for a while though. So,
oh, I know one way to look it up.
What's that?
We were inspired by the G15 satellite going nuts.
That's true. Oh, wow, that is true. Gee.
So, we were drinking. Go with the weekend after that article was published.
Galaxy 15 satellite news. Zombie Satellite comes back to life December 2019. So, but that was a follow-up article. So the original, so the follow-up was in December of 2010. The zombie communication, September 16th of 2010 is when the original Galaxy 15 article came out that inspired us to register Galaxy 15 radio.
So the weekend after that.
Yeah. So
because you got really drunk.
October 2010. So hell, we're coming up on 10 years ourselves. So. But, yeah, so, you know, hey, well done, guys. And speaking of, you know, I mean, hell, 20 years is a hell of a run, especially for an internet website, right?
Yeah, it started with, let's pull up WinApp and see what's on it. Remember when you could do that?
Yeah, I do remember when you could do that. I used to do that quite a bit towards when I got the idea. How many times did I try to start one? I mean, shit.
Three or four in the apartment.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, you could watch Farscape, all kinds of stuff without worrying about, I don't know, anyone finding you.
Yeah.
Sometimes back when you had to work to be a nerd.
I miss the old internet sometimes.
It's still out there. It's under all this gloss and stuff. You can still find BBSs and everything.
Oh, yeah. There's not as many of them. Doesn't feel quite... That's the problem with nostalgia, right? It's like pulling up like old Atari and NES games now. It's just like, I remember this game looking a lot better than this. What the hell? So. Anyways, let's do this. I need to make some new sound bumpers or whatever you'd call those at some point. Sound effects.
Bumper would be accurate.
Yeah. I need to make some new ones. I've been using that one for years. First thing I have, the Free Software Foundation put out a fairly nice article on using GNU PGP and the Enigmail plugin. And they've got a breakdown for Linux, for Mac, for Windows, and in multiple languages. So if you want to understand email encryption, or at least get a start on it, and this is true private email encryption, self-managed, you have to do your own keys. This is the old school key signing parties and stuff like that. This is not, you know, a managed email service where you have to worry about, because even if you're using a Gmail or, you know, an ISP email system, you're doing the encryption on your machine. So it never, the clear text never leaves. So even if somebody's monitoring everything in your email, they can't read anything. They just see encrypted garbage without the keys, right? It also means that if you're always signing your email messages, it's impossible for somebody to forge email from you, because if you always have the key on your email, it's possible, even if you don't encrypt it, for people who also use the Enigmail plugin to verify that you really sent the message. Which for email, where it's basically a text file, is actually kind of important. So it's a nice write-up. You know, it's enough to get you started in how to use it. And they've even got, you know, some kind of a mail bot that they're using and some tips on how to do it and, you know, how to set up Web of Trust and a few other things like that. So it's a nice starting point for encrypted email. It's a decent write-up.
Ooh, defense against spear phishing if you're running this?
If you can convince the people who they would attempt to spear phish to use it, yes. That's easier said than done, because in my experience, the people that you are trying to protect from spear phishing are usually the ones who don't want jack to do with your, you know, email encryption and setting up their systems. They're usually the ones telling you to set their password to never expire and, you know, let them... You know, just kind of press, you know, I want my password to be the letter A. And, you know, never filter email coming to me. I need to make sure I get all of my messages. And yeah. So, but yes, if you could convince them to use it, it absolutely would help with spear phishing, because the very first thing you would see is that this email signature doesn't match the sender. So, and then the final thing I have tonight is a write-up on Medium with a nice list of open source intelligence resources for 2019. They start off with the basics, DNS commands, you know, doing lookups on the command line, who is NS lookup, that kind of thing. How to do some port scanners and some basic Google dorking. But then they start going on with some of the more complicated internet scanners, Shodan, Sensis, Binary Edge, some of the passive DNS sites out there for trying to figure out like reputation of websites, who is reversing, and even some automation stuff like Multigo, Spiderfoot, Harvester, and you know, some OS intelligence like podcasts and websites and newsletters and stuff. So you're wanting to get into doing passive information gathering or information gathering on websites, because they talk about Nmap and some other port scanning stuff in there, and that's not so passive, but you want to get a good information on how to interrogate a website, do some Google dorking, you know, just learn how to do digging on the internet about what servers are and the like. This is a pretty good place to start. And that's all I've got. You know, Happy New Year and Madman future news. I mean, closing thoughts.
Closing thoughts. Well, you've been doing this. I've been playing with something that everyone that listens to this probably already knows about. But I didn't really mess with it until I started listening to things on my phone, now that I have a job that allows me to do that. I found a little site that lets me copy all the news things I like listening to on YouTube into MP3 files, and then I can play them on my phone without using up my data.
Yeah, there's several websites. That's how I get clips out of YouTube videos, is doing that. Which one are you using?
I'm using Online Video Carnivore. Or Converter? I'm sorry.
I don't know. Online Video Carnivore sounds cooler.
Yes, it does.
So.
I'm using that one.
Okay. Well, I'll throw that in the closing thought links just so it's there. And, yeah. So that's all I got. And listen to the stream. We supposedly are always working on it, although I don't think we've really done that much to it lately. Pure Decking every Thursday, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit. Yeah, hopefully we'll have more of the regular crew start showing up, and I'm gonna play the sound now.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.